Good afternoon, and welcome to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, the Committee on Alaska's Economy. Today is January 31st, 2017, and the time is 1:30. We are joined by Senator Gardner, and soon Senator Meyer, Senator Hughes, and Senator Stevens will be joining us. They were in a previous meeting. I'd like to thank Carrie, the recording secretary, and Matt, the LIO operator. Today we are talking about opportunity and vocational education for Alaskans. We have completed a series of hearings focusing on Alaska's economy. We had 2 weeks of in-depth hearings about the condition of our economy, and we had a panel of economists, including a bank president, and we also were joined by the Department of Labor and Workforce Development lead researcher, which was very helpful. In addition, we had the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation before the committee. So we've learned that we are in a recession, and we are facing a challenge, not a crisis. We've talked about policy options, providing certainty, the legislature's role in providing certainty to this challenge we face, and developing an economic strategy for the state of Alaska. We had the Department of Commerce with us earlier, talking about their efforts in developing an economic strategy for Alaska, which so far to this point we as a legislature have not asked for that, or we have not put it in statute. So we're toying with the possibility of putting something in our body of law that says that Alaska does need an economic strategy. And so today we're going to be bringing it home by talking about training for Alaskans and also Alaskans' jobs. So we will be looking at the Department of Labor's job training programs. With us we have Commissioner Heidi Dragas, welcome, and the Deputy Commissioner Greg Cashin, welcome. Following your presentation, we will have Joey Crum, who's the President and CEO of Northern Industrial Training. Following Joey, we will have Amy Nybert, who's the President of the Associated Builders and Contractors, Alaska. And then finally, we will be joined by Doug Ward. Thank you, Doug, for making the trip, who's the Director of the Shipyard Development for Vigor. So with that, I would like to again welcome Commissioner. Please feel free to begin your presentation.
Good afternoon, Chair Costello. Thank you for the opportunity to appear before you again today. For the record, my name is Heidi Dragas. I'm the Commissioner for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. With me today is Deputy Commissioner Greg Cashin. And behind me is also our Administrative Services Director, Paloma Harbor. We're going to be discussing some of the department's workforce development programs here today. Most of you on the committee are familiar with this slide. The department's mission is to provide safe and legal working conditions and advance opportunities for employment, and the department accomplishes this mission through its core services of protecting Alaska's workers through statutory and regulatory consultation and enforcement, developing Alaska's workers for Alaska's jobs, and income replacement for injured, unemployed, or disabled Alaskan workers. This chart here shows the department's budget by core service since fiscal year 2008. The department's workforce development budget in fiscal year 2018 is $11.4 million less than it was in fiscal year 2008. This is in large part due to the recent elimination of multiple unrestricted general fund supported workforce development grant programs, which include Alaska Youth First, oil and gas training, and career and technical education, as well as a significant reduction to the Alaska Construction Academy funding. So now we'll take a look at the department's workforce development programs in further detail. AVTEC, the Alaska Vocational and Technical Center in Seward, is a post-secondary vocational technical training institute whose mission is to train a diverse and effective workforce that supports economic growth and stability of our state. This chart shows AVTEC's budget since fiscal year 2008. And they're all designated in different colors for the different fund sources. Federal funds include Pell Grants and federal loans for AVTEC students. Other state funds include interagency receipts for training provided to other state agencies, such as school bus driver training, and statutory designated program receipts, which are non-state grants and contracts, such as contract training revenue and education tax credit donations. Designated general funds include funding from the Technical and Vocational Education Program, or TVET, student tuition and fee revenue. In 2018, fiscal year 2018, student tuition and fees are being increased 7.5%. This is the second year of a two-year tuition and fee increase at ABTECH. ABTECH has a new director. Her name is Kathy LeCompte. I believe she's also on the line if there are any questions that pop up. The department will be working very closely with Ms. LeCompte to develop a strategic plan for ABTECH that includes making its programs more self-sustaining and reducing reliance on UGF while still meeting critical state workforce development needs. So ABTECH has two different types of training programs: short-term training programs, which is anything less than 6 weeks, and long-term programs. ABTECH's longest program is 10 months, and its motto is a career in less than a year. Most of ABTECH's short-term training is maritime related. ABTECH's long-term training includes programs such as welding, plumbing and heating, and culinary arts. The long-term program enrollment decline that you'll see in fiscal year 2016, which is at the top of the slide, was a direct result of state budget pressures resulting in the closure of ABTECH's Allied Health program. This next slide displays ABTECH's performance between fiscal year 2006 and fiscal year 2016. ABTECH is a highly effective program with an average graduation rate of 89%. With an average graduation rate of 88% over the last 5 years. Also, over the past 5 years, an average of 89% of ABTECH's graduates were employed in their area of training within 1 year. Next, we will look at the State Training and Employment Program, or STEP. The purpose of STEP is to enhance the quality and accessibility of job training and to provide reemployment assistance to unemployed or underemployed workers. STEP is funded by employee contributions to unemployment insurance. That contribution right now is at 0.1%. About 75% of STEP funds are distributed via a competitive grant program and awarded to training providers to train Alaskans. Grant applications are reviewed thoroughly by the department staff as well as Alaska Workforce Investment Board members. The remaining 25% of STEP funds are distributed to Alaskans through job centers for individual training accounts, which we will discuss a bit later. The STEP program is limited to the training of adults. This chart shows the number of Alaskans that have exited the STEP program from fiscal year 2006 through fiscal year 2015 and how many were employed within 1 year. Both STEP participation and employment are on a very healthy upward trajectory, and we expect that to continue. The department did implement a division consolidation starting in fiscal year 2016, which reduced administrative costs in the department and put an additional $1 million in STEP funds out on the street as grants to train Alaskans.
Commissioner, thank you. And as I mentioned when we started the committee, we knew that Senators Meyer, Hughes, and Stevens would be joining us. So welcome, members, to the committee. So now we have a full committee.
Thank you, Chair Costello. The next slide is another way to look at the effectiveness of the STEP program. I love this slide. I've showed you this committee this slide before. This shows the greater earning potential of a STEP trainee over time. So the blue column in the center highlights the year that the students received training, and that was in 2006. The blue line on top tracks the earning of UI claimants that received STEP training. The red line on the bottom tracks the UI claimants who were eligible to receive STEP training in 2006, but for whatever reason decided not to participate. By looking back 10 years, as we have done in this slide, we can take a longer look at the effect of STEP training and what it had, the effect it had on earnings over time. By 2014, STEP trainees earned an average of over $62,000 annually, while UI claimants that did not participate in STEP training earned an average of $33,000 annually. The difference in earning potential for those individuals is substantial and speaks to the effectiveness of the STEP program. Next, we will look at the Technical and Vocational Education Program, or TVEP. The purpose of TVEP is to enhance the quality and accessibility of job training across the state and align training with regional workforce demands. TVEP training participants can include both youth and adults in their programs. TVEP is also funded similarly to STEP. It's an employee contribution to unemployment insurance, and the current employee contribution to TVEP is 0.16%. TVEP funding is distributed in accordance with statute. One of the department's highest legislative priorities is reauthorization of this distribution, which is scheduled to sunset on June 30th of this year. TVEP funding has increased significantly since fiscal year 2008. That's simply because more recipients have been added to the statute, and the employee contribution has increased from 0.1% to 0.16%.
Commissioner, could you clarify in that percentage, are you talking about of the total funding for the program or of the overall state budget?
The
does this program receive other funding besides the contribution? It must, and so I'm asking, where does that other funding come from?
The only funding to TVEP is the 0.16% contribution by employees to the unemployment insurance fund.
And so, okay, thank you. Any further questions since we interrupted the commissioner? Thank you. Please continue.
We are only displaying enrollment and employment information for TVEP since fiscal year 2012. And the reason for this is because before that, reporting was simply inconsistent. We've made significant strides to work with TVEP recipients to improve this, and we are continuing to do that. Many TVEP participants are either youth still in school or adults that are just beginning their training. Success in these programs gives participants skills and confidence they need to enter employment or seek additional training. Many students go from one training provider to another to advance their skills. The Northwestern Alaska Career and Technical Center, or NACTEC in Nome, has put together some really nice flyers on NACTEC students that went to AVTEC for advanced vocational training. They hang these flyers at their school to encourage more students to further their training. So we included one of those flyers for your reference. We just think it's a wonderful example of success for Alaskans served by these TVEP recipients. A statewide network of training providers is critical to developing an Alaskan workforce for Alaska's jobs, and that's what the TVEP program supports. And now I will turn it over to Deputy Commissioner Greg Cashin to talk about the Alaska Construction Academy.
Thank you, Commissioner, and for the record, Greg Cashin, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Labor. We're going to take a look at the Alaska Construction Academy program. The purpose of the Construction Academy program is to promote an understanding of the construction trades and develop a strong, flexible workforce for the varied industries that rely on construction. Construction Academy training participants used to include both youth and adults. However, due to significant budget cuts as of fiscal year 2017, there is no longer any funding for youth training. In accordance with the fiscal year 17 legislative intent, the department reduced the general fund authority supporting academies by another $600,000 in unrestricted general fund in FY18. The remaining Construction Academy funding totals $1.26 million in unrestricted general fund. If the legislative intent language continues, this program will be eliminated by fiscal year 21. The department is concerned about eliminating funding for the academies and believes this is short-sighted given our aging Alaskan construction workforce. Failure to train Alaskans for these jobs doesn't mean the jobs are going to go away. It means it simply results in jobs going to outsiders.
Deputy Commissioner Cashman, yep. Are there private sector job training opportunities that are also looking at the construction industry?
Chair Costello?
Chair Costello, as far as private training entities, there are several union and non-union apprenticeship programs that train Alaskans. The Alaska Construction Academy is sort of a feeder program. It's an introduction for a lot of individuals to the construction trades. Many of those individuals go on to work directly with employers or go on to seek apprenticeship training in a construction trade. Does that answer your question?
It does. Thank you. A follow-up to that is that we recently heard from, in our previous hearings from economists, that the oil and gas industry was first lost jobs and the construction industry has lost jobs. Are you aware of how the training opportunities is related to that, or is the overall economy basically driving that?
Well, again, this is Heidi Dragas, Commissioner for the Department of Labor. I think that there's a complicated set of factors involved here. I mean, we know we have a declining construction jobs right now. We also have declining oil and gas jobs. However, we have an aging construction workforce. And the thing about the construction workforce is that it's a cross-industry workforce. So a lot of individuals working in the construction trades can cross industries to work in oil and gas. So it's important that even though we are going to see in the short term a decline in construction jobs, we still have significant federal funds for construction jobs that are a significant military funding for military construction across the state, especially in the interior. So I think it's important that we not lose sight simply because we're in a recession right now in the state of Alaska. We would do a disservice to Alaska if we didn't continue to train employees. There will always be construction jobs. There will always be oil and gas jobs, at least for the foreseeable future. Failure to train new Alaskans in those jobs, I think, would do a disservice. And I think we said this before in our presentation. It doesn't mean that the jobs go away. It just means that they're going to have to fill them somehow, and they're going to be filled by folks from the lower 48.
Senator Hughes.
Thank you. And I appreciate what you're presenting, but I'm wondering if there is a need in the marketplace and the academy by 2021 isn't in existence and there's a need, I would think the private sector would step up and meet that need. You're saying no, we would bring people in from outside would take those jobs. Why wouldn't the private sector step up and fill that gap here in Alaska?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, I think that was if that's what came across, I think that's a misinterpretation. I do think the private sector would step up. The private sector has stepped up for years and years in the construction industry to train Alaskans. So I don't think you'd ever see that go away. The Construction Academy has not been in existence for that long. So before that, it was the private sector and private industry that stepped up. I think one of the things that I really liked when I learned about the construction academies is one of the parts of it that have been cut right now is the introduction to the construction trades, introduction to youth in the construction trades. They get an opportunity to work hands-on to see if it's something that they are interested in. I know I've talked with Senator Costello about this extensively, about the need to expose young Alaskans to opportunities in the construction trades. They are rewarding careers. They pay very good middle-class wages. They have good benefits. And so I think it's important to expose individuals to that. The funding now is limited to the training of adults, but it is that sort of opportunity to introduce individuals to the construction trade. So I still think the program supports a critical need in Alaska. But there is private industry and private training organizations joint apprenticeship training committees that do step up and train Alaskans.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And welcome back to the committee.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Do you have any information for us at some point on the aging of the workforce? I'd like to see specifics if we can.
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, we'd be happy to get you that information.
And Commissioner, I actually have a follow-up to the question that Senator Hughes asked.
As the department whose main focus is jobs, and that's really the focus of this committee is the economy and jobs, I mean, what other efforts is the department undergoing to create a business climate so that jobs are created?
Senator Costello, I think that's a pretty complicated question. I think the departments don't operate in silos, but creating a strong business climate is something that the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development has been committed to. So to that end, the Department of Commerce has been working on an economic development plan for Alaska, and they've been gracious enough to include the department in those discussions. One of the things that we have been working on maintain and grow our business opportunities in Alaska is the utilization of registered apprenticeships in any number of occupations, and we're going to talk about that a little more later on in the presentation. But we have been working with the economic development team at Commerce to tackle some of those issues.
Thank you, Commissioner. And so that brings me to, so you see the Department of Commerce is focused more on jobs than the Department of Labor. And you recently, there's been changes to the mission of the Department of Labor. Do you want to talk about those changes that you made in your mission statement, or and if that's a part of, are you taking the department in a different direction, or what's the vision there with the mission statement?
Senator Costello, I'm a little confused by your question. The mission of the department has not changed. And in fact, I would not say that the Department of Commerce is the department tasked with creating jobs. That is the job of the Department of Labor, and we're very proud of that. And we work very hard, hand in hand with it, with industry, to work to meet the needs of industries when it comes to job and workforce development. And that's what we're focused on. When we look at registered apprenticeships in the maritime industry, when we look at a registered apprenticeship in the healthcare industry, in aviation, those are opportunities where employers have come to us and see a need for development, workforce development opportunities in those areas. So the department is absolutely committed to training Alaskans to fill those jobs. I guess I wouldn't say there's a disconnect between the mission of the Department of Commerce and the mission of the Department of Labor. I think they work hand in hand, I think, together for job creation and job training.
Any further questions from committee members? Okay. Please continue.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Greg Cashin again, Deputy Commissioner. We're going to take a look at the performance of the Alaska Construction Academy. And again, we're only displaying information for the Construction Academy since fiscal year 2012, because prior to that, reporting was somewhat inconsistent and incomplete. And since we have submitted the presentation for the committee's review, the Construction Education Foundation that administers these programs has raised some concerns that the fiscal year 2012 figures may not include all adult participants, and we're looking into that. So if we need to make a correction to some of those numbers, we will submit that to the committee.
Thank you.
A few statistics on the Construction Academy. 200 of the Construction Academy participants over the time frame of 2012 through 2015 went on to enter an apprenticeship program. And 12% of those were female, which is higher than the overall percentage of female participation in construction apprenticeships. Female Construction Academy participants also had noticeably higher employment rates in the year after training than before. Another figure, 21% of the Construction Academy participants over this time frame of 2012 through 2015 were Alaska Native, and the Alaska Native participants also saw a significantly higher percentage employed the year after training than the year before. So I'd like to switch over to take a look at the Vocational Rehabilitation Client Services Program. The Division of Vocational Rehabilitation is focused on delivering services to disabled Alaskans. This is critical to the department's mission of advancing employment opportunities for all Alaskans. Unrestricted general fund in the vocational rehabilitation component represents a required state match, and for every dollar of state funding that's reduced, we lose a dollar of federal funding. Questions on that? On the next slide, the average wage of individuals exiting the vocational rehabilitation program employed during fiscal year 16 was $14.38 per hour, which far exceeded the federal and Alaskan minimum wage levels. The state's vocational rehabilitation program is actually quite successful, given that over 90% of the individuals receiving services each year are significantly disabled with multiple barriers to employment. In general, Alaska has a highly transient population. This is even more so in the case for Alaskans with disabilities. During 2016, over 80% of the individuals who exited from the program without employment simply because staff could no longer locate them. The next slide, I'd like to take a look at individual training accounts. The committee asked for some background related to the department's individual training accounts, or ITAs. The department supports individual training accounts with Federal Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, or WIOA, adult and dislocated worker funding. This funding is distributed through Job Center case managers statewide. They meet one-on-one with participants to assess the needs and goals of clients and develop an individual employment plan.
Transferred over to the
Senator Hughes.
Just to click on the previous slide, is there funding from the Veterans Administration that feeds into that at all? The individual training accounts? No.
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, we can verify that with our Administrative Services Director, but no, I don't believe so. Most of that is supported through WIOA, the funding, which is the Federal Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, adult and dislocated dislocated worker funding. So I don't believe we receive any funds from the Department of Veterans Affairs.
Senator Hughes?
And so follow-up, Madam Chair. So no VA money in this, but is your department dealing with any pass-through Veterans Administration money for any workforce training?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, no, we don't receive any funding from the Veterans Administration, but a lot of our programs are geared towards training veterans. We provide funds to the Helmets to Hard Hats program, which works to train veterans. We have veteran specialists in our job centers that work to train and reemploy veterans. We have the Healing Hearts program is a program in the Anchorage Wasilla area that the department partners with also to train veterans for jobs. But we don't receive any funding from the VA for those. All of that funding that we receive comes through the U.S. Department of Labor.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to take a brief at ease. Thank you. Senate Labor and Commerce Committee is back to order, and we have Commissioner Heidi Dryguess with us.
Thank you, Senator Costello. We were also asked to provide some information on registered apprenticeship, and we're happy to do so. Registered apprenticeship is a national system that has been utilized to meet America's skilled workforce needs for over 75 years. More than 90% of Alaskans that graduate from apprenticeship programs stay to work in our state. Apprenticeship is a unique training system that combines job-related technical instruction with structured on-the-job learning experience. This enables employers to develop and apply industry standards to training programs that increase productivity and improve retention. The registered apprenticeship system effectively meets the needs of both employers and workers. The progressive wage scale of the registered apprenticeship system provides an opportunity for workers seeking high-skilled, high-paying jobs to work their way up and meet the needs of employers seeking to build a qualified workforce. Registered apprenticeship thrives in the construction trades, but it is also instrumental in training and development of emerging industries in Alaska. Apprenticeship works for more than 1,000 different occupations, and many employers use apprenticeship for workforce development right here in Alaska. With some competitive federal grants we've received at the department, we've been able to coordinate efforts to expand apprenticeship into the healthcare, aviation, and maritime industries. We're actively working with partners to develop apprenticeship programs that help them address their recruitment needs. Employers such as ANTHC and partner labor unions have established the Alaska Healthcare Apprenticeship Consortium as a statewide nonprofit to expand healthcare apprenticeships. Similar efforts are underway with aviation partners such as the Alaska Air Carriers Association. The department has also worked very closely with Chilista Corporation on the development of new maritime apprenticeship program in partnership with Bryce Marine and other employers. Across sectors, we are working to expand the number of veterans, women, and minorities in apprenticeship. Job Center veteran representatives help connect veterans with apprenticeship. For veterans who need additional training to enter apprenticeships, we help them find it. Alaska's construction apprenticeships have 3 times more women per capita than the percentage of women in the construction industry overall. Alaska Natives participate in apprenticeship at rates that slightly exceed their proportion of the overall state population. And we will continue to work with Alaska Native partners such as ANTHC and Chilista Corporation to continue expanding apprenticeships among tribal employers. So that concludes the department's presentation today, and we are happy to answer any other questions that you may have. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Are there any questions of committee members? Senator Gardner.
Thank you. I just have a quick question back to the beginning. I believe it's slide 4. I was holding my questions. Let's see. I guess it's really 3. You can see where the green federal receipts increases and starts to slow at the same time as state spending increases. Is that correlated? Are we providing matching funds there? Is that why the purple grows as the green grows? Or is that just coincidence?
Senator Gardner, through the chair, I'm almost comfortable answering that, but I'm going to call up our Administrative Services Director, Paloma Harbour, to make sure we answer it correctly.
Thank you. And just to be clear, it's actually not that slide. It's the one that says AVTEC budget by fund source, 08 through 18. Yeah, that one. It is 4.
What slide is that?
4.
Yes, this one.
Okay. For the record, Paloma Harbour, Administrative Services Division Director for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Through the chair, Senator Gardner, that federal funding is pass-through funding to the students for Pell Grants and direct loans. It helps pay their tuition and fees and things. There was a federal change that required federal direct loans to go through the institution that the student attends. So that's why you see an increase there.
Okay. Thank you. And if I might, Madam Chair.
Senator Gardner.
The next slide, the AVTEC enrollment for 08 and 16. The long-term enrollment has some fluctuation, but it's relatively stable. The short-term enrollment has some pretty dramatic fluctuations. Do we know why that is?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, yes. I think we've been partnering more effectively with private industry, especially in the maritime industry. So a lot of those short-term programs are for industries that want to train their existing workforce in certain classes or certain aspects of the maritime industry. That's usually where we see those short-term enrollments. And so we've been partnering yeah, more effectively with industry.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other committee members have questions? Well, thank you very much, Commissioner, Deputy Commissioner, and also Paloma. So we'll take a brief at ease, and then we'll have Joey Crum, who's President and CEO of Northern Industrial Training, with us. Labor and Commerce Committee is coming back to order, and next we have Joey Crum, who's the President and CEO of Northern Industrial Training. Welcome to the committee. I also want to take this moment to say that the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee has a Facebook page, and we've been posting interviews with presenters and our schedule, in addition to some information about what's happening in the committee. So I want to invite everyone to follow us if you're not already following us. So. Thank you very much, Mr. Crum, for coming before us.
Thank you for the opportunity. For the record, my name is Joey Crum. I'm the President and CEO of Northern Industrial Training. Northern Industrial Training, NIT, is a privately owned post-secondary vocational training facility with our main location in Palmer, Satellite, and Anchorage, but we do training statewide. We started in October of 2003, and since that time we have trained and or tested over 22,000 Alaskans. So the and or tested refers to the fact that we are a third-party CDL examiner for the state of Alaska, so that number includes the CDLs that we've administered on the behalf of the state.
Thank you, Mr. Crum. So that's the commercial driver's license, and just for those Alaskans listening in, if we can just at least the first time maybe share what the acronym stands for. We try to be an acronym-free committee, but it's a hard role to play.
It's very tough in the industrial world as well. Well, NIT is based on five anchors. We have five foundational anchors that hold us in place against the shifting currents. They are professionalism, integrity, respect, consistency, and most important to me as a lifelong Alaskan, the will to succeed. So what our institution has been based on is programmatic accreditations, meaning that we are accredited by the NCCER, which is the National Center for Construction Education and Research, as an accredited training sponsor. We have three certified programs through the Professional Truck Driving Institute, PTDI. We are approved and regulated by the Alaska Department of Motor Vehicles. We are the American Welding Society accredited testing facility, the only one in Alaska currently. And we are a CIC, or a Crane Institute certified rigger and crane operator. Well, we chose this programmatic accreditation path because this were responding to the business lines and the need of the industry. It is fair to say that we started primarily with trucks only and then have expanded as the employers that hire our students and the market has demanded. Well, we try to find relevant training programs that provide national level certifications to expand the opportunities for Alaskans to seek employment. So that is our main mission, is the focus on the employment side. We have had a shift in the past couple of years, and we are currently accepted into candidacy status by the Council on Occupational Education to become nationally accredited, and we'll be hosting our visiting team in September of this year. COE is the same national accrediting institution that accredits AVTEC, for reference. We have chosen to go through this path as an opportunity to actually gain some partnerships with higher education in the state of Alaska, to open pathways. So if somebody attends some of these trainings in many, many other states, the NCCER curriculum has many higher education partners that allow for credit of those, and we're attempting to go there When we had offices in North Dakota, we accomplished this with Dickinson State University in less than 1 year. And we're over 13 years in the state of Alaska, have yet to accomplish it. So we are moving towards the national accreditation in hopes of furthering the discussion to actually create additional pathways of education for Alaskans.
Senator Hughes.
The 13 years you've attempted here in Alaska, has that been with the University of Alaska? And could you briefly tell us what blocked that? What was the problem?
Yes, it is with the University of Alaska. I do need to say that we did accomplish an articulation agreement with Illisogvik College. They would allow credit for certain courses that transferred. As far as the university goes, the conversations never went past the opening line. We can honestly tell you that I've never been given a reason, but this is a labor and commerce, but there's a reason why UAA can't, graduates or students are having trouble transferring to UAF. It is a systemic issue for the state. When we look at our numbers, I've included 2013, 14, 15, and 16. And in past presentations when I've done this, we've been consistent in reporting basically a year behind. The industry seems to report a year behind, so I did not include 16 this year, but I do have those numbers if needed. So what you can see are the topic headings for the areas of training. A CDL obviously is the commercial driver's license, and these are all programs that are skills development training. These are not simply tests. So you can see that we have seen a spike in CDL enrollment into 2016, and we're projecting to increase that again in 2017, and this is the result of our ability to court employers outside of the state of Alaska that will hire graduates while they live in Alaska, rotate them to the lower 48, meaning pay for their airfare, allow them to work a set schedule, and rotate them back. Oh, it's these kind of partnerships, I think, that are going to benefit us tremendously in the next 3 to 5 years when we see that economy growing, because there are very few open truck driver positions now in the state of Alaska. And as we experience the national attrition or increased opportunities, we are going to have a homegrown, trained, built-in workforce that can just come home. The welding trades have held steady. The heavy equipment, you are going to see a significant decrease, and I think that really is reflective of what we've faced over the last couple of years with declining oil and gas specifically.
Mr. Crum, we have a question for you from Senator Gardner.
Sorry. Thank you for your testimony. Regarding your graduates moving out of state or working out of state and traveling back and forth, a sort of reverse for what we see in the oil patch, how confident are we that these people won't just stay where they're employed? I mean, our students who go out of state to study very often don't come back.
Through the chair, that's a very fair question, and one that does put us at risk. I can tell you that the numbers have bared out, that we've had this relationship for over a year now, and less than 10% have actually exited Alaska. The flip side of that is the market in Alaska currently doesn't support them for this trade.
Mm-hmm.
So that is, there are very few alternatives when it comes to this trade in the state of Alaska. So they must go somewhere else. So it is a risk we do face.
Thank you.
When we look at the other trends in the project management and the HSET is the health, safety, and environmental technician course, you do see a decrease in that number of enrollments across the board. Carpentry and roustabouts, you are going to see that in 2016 we ran zero courses. We are very, very active in trade associations, employer panels, and traveling to individual borough or city council meetings throughout the state of Alaska. And the reason we do this is to attempt to have our finger on a pulse of what the job market is. And in 2015, we predicted that the market could bear very few to none roustabout and carpentry new entries into the workforce. So we didn't run any. But we would rather fall short than overstate. And I do believe there is nothing more devastating to an Alaska family than to put them in a training path with a potential outcome only to find out that the outcome is not possible. And then the mechanics courses, those are new entrants for us, and that's why you're seeing those numbers not start until 2015.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Crum. So question, where do most of your graduates go? I know on the CDLs, I've heard they can't get enough, like Carlisle, can't get enough truck drivers to go up to the North Slope. But do a lot of your graduates work on the slope?
Through the chair. A significant portion used to work on the slope. I would say there's still a fair number there, but we are seeing a shift. The slope companies that do employ them, CH2M Hill is a big one. And they are actually rehiring some welders back at their Anchorage fab shop. On the welders, we've put people to work at Vigor, both in Seward and Ketchikan. We've performed pre-employment testing for Vigor as well on the weld side of it. The project management in the HSIT is a much smaller numbers, so there's not one or two employers that I can point to. It's more of a general across the board.
Madam Chair.
Senator Meyer.
So I guess let me refine my question a little bit. Are we able to keep up on the CDLs? Because it just seemed like we couldn't get enough truck drivers.
Through the chair, currently that need has slowed.
Okay.
Trucking is an industry. Commissioner Dragas talked about the aging of our workforce, and that is a sentiment that I absolutely concur with. And when you pull up the CDL records in the state of Alaska, you're going to find that there's about 33,000 CDL holders. There's CDL holders, and then there's truck drivers. And the number of truck drivers going to work in the Alaskan market, it has definitely leveled off and slowed very, very dramatically over the last year. If we were on a trajectory such as 2013-14 in the first half of 2015, I could unequivocally answer your question that keeping up with the new entrants in the state of Alaska would be very hard. That being said, I would like to say that none of our programs that we are running are at capacity.
But Madam Chair, if I can just follow up, though, it does appear that your enrollment for the CDL is up. It's almost the only one that is up. I guess welding's up one. So that's encouraging, even though you're right, the demand has gone down considerably.
Yeah, it is. Sorry, through the chair. It is very encouraging, and I do 100% rest that on the employers in the lower 48, Schneider National, Yellow Line, Interstate, and others that are hiring Alaskans for that opportunity.
Okay.
Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Crum, you just said that none of your programs are at capacity. I was wondering, is there duplication of any of your programs with AvTech at this point? Is there overlap where you're training the same thing?
Through the chair, the training the same thing will always be a point of debate. But what I can tell you that there is certainly some overlap specifically in the welding area. And then a small amount of the mechanics programs. So those are definitely, but AvTech isn't the only one. The University of Alaska offers many of these programs throughout. I do believe that our numbers combined in those areas are more than any other individual institution. But our courses are based on what we like to call boot camp style, where they're a minimum of 40 hours a week, over a set period of time, start A until you finish. And this was done at the suggestion, honestly, of employers to prepare them for the workforce. So they don't run on typical semester schedules. So yes, there is overlap, but in all fairness, there are different. They are different programs.
It's follow up, Senator Hughes.
The state dollars used for these other programs. Understanding that we face this pesky fiscal gap, if some of those dollars went away for those other state supported programs, would you be able to pick up the slack?
Through the chair, short answer, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? Senator Gardner.
Thank you. I'm sort of curious about how your costs for students compare to costs for the programs through the Department of Labor, where you both offer comparable programs. And are you a for-profit, not-for-profit, private, public company?
Through the chair. We are a for-profit institution, mm-hmm. And we chose that reason. We chose that designation for a reason, and the reason that we chose that designation is if we do not produce, we do not have a safety net. If we do not produce, students do not come. If we offer any courses that are contrary to what the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education or the Department of Labor, if we violate those, we're going to be put out of business. So it was kind of a motivating factor, an internal choice for us. I'm not trying to project anything onto another institution. As far as the cost goes, we do not receive any designated funds or unrestricted general funds from the state of Alaska. We are eligible for the Alaska Student Loan, VA benefits, individual training accounts, and we are allowed to bid on step competitive bid processes that are allowable for third-party training providers. As far as the costs go, I don't have the information on what those institutions actually cost per student, so I don't believe I can adequately answer that, but what I can do is supply the committee with a price sheet when I'm done of my classes, if that would help.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam
Senator
Chair.
Gardner.
I would just sort of be interested in knowing what the cost, how it compares to the state programs, and also the completion rates for students, because I've seen some kinds of programs that are state programs that had great numbers of enrollment, not in the labor department, but the completion rates were really small, so the cost of the state per student was really high. So I'm just sort of curious to know about completion rates and cost to students.
Through the chair, yes, absolutely. I can provide you some information. On the slide that's up there now, that is representative of our graduation rate. When you get into the realm of accredited or not, you can define what completion means and the time frame that it is allowed. My institution is if you enroll in a 16-week class, you have 16 weeks to complete. So we call them graduators. So the numbers that are up there are showing the actual graduation rates per program heading.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Crum.
When you move on to the next slide, you're going to see two things. One, this is called short, and two, what happens when you attempt to create a PowerPoint with one hand. The numbers for the enrollments and the certificates are not placed on the screen, and for that I apologize. What I'm trying to illustrate in the blue is 2015, and the greenish color is 2016. And for our short-term programs, the number of enrollments in 2015 was 2,688. In 2015, it was 2,496. The certificates issued – I need to recant something I just said. I apologize.
You know, I was writing it down, and I was – yes, thank you, Mr. Crump.
Apparently, I'm also one side of my brain. When we take the first two columns first, enrollments, those numbers are 2,688 for 2015 and for 2016, 1,224. for the certificates issued in 2015, that number is 2,496. In 2016, it is 1,081. So the certificate issues are those that are industry recognized. They could be regulatory training-wise. They could be CDLs. They could be AWS welding certifications, for example. For our long-term program, the enrollments of the two versus 2015, we had 415. In 2016, the number was down to 376. Certificates issued in 2015 were 1,748 and then fell in 2016 to 1,241. So, and then the numbers on the bottom are reflective of the number of students that returned. When we talk about enrollments, we do not count if somebody enrolled in more than one class more than once. Oh, for example, if somebody decided to take a welding program and a CDL program, for us, that's one student. So Northern Industrial Training, we truly focus on the output. And we do a lot of screening on the input. For all of our programs, for all of our long-term programs, we require a physical and a drug test, and that drug test actually enrolls you into a random consortium while you're there at training. The point is to simulate a working environment as much as possible. Well, I do believe this helps us with our performance numbers. I believe that workforce development is about connecting these students with the potential employers and then allowing the student the choice to attend the one that fits best, the training provider best for what their learning style, time, and money situation allows.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gardner, followed by Senator Hughes.
Thank you. I'm trying to figure out, understand one of the things you said. You said, depending on something they're enrolled, there's an automatic enrollment in a random consortia. Did I have that right? I'm sorry, I have no clue what that means.
Through the chair, specifically the CDL side is the best example I can provide
okay.
you. Federal law provides that in order to work as a truck driver, you have to take a drug test. And companies are required to maintain a certain amount of random testing throughout, and that's where the consortium comes through. And so that depending upon the previous year's violation, the Federal Motor Safety Carrier Association sets a percentage of your current employees that must be retested annually. And as a driving school under federal law, our students are viewed technically in this instance as our employees. So they must be entered into that random testing consortium. Did I help answer that?
Madam Chair, if I might.
Senator Gardner?
I think so. So all of the students are treated as if they were CDL licensed, and then they have to be randomly tested, and based on the number of failed tests or bad test results, they are randomly assigned for retesting?
Through the chair. They're enrolled in a consortium. The different programs, some of them are dictated by federal law. So they will. The truck driving one is set by the truck driving association. Mm-hmm. The other ones are set. We follow similar to the, and it's just a random poll. So when the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Association assigns, for example, 2 years ago, they required that every company randomly test 50% of their employees in a calendar year. And that was based off of some statistics and data that came from crash and incident rates. That has since dropped as we've seen the crash and incident rates actually go down.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Gardner, it's just my understanding that they simulate the working environment as much as possible in the training environment so that the students can be successful. And if I don't have that correct, Mr. Crum, let me know.
Right. Yeah. That is correct.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I want to thank you for your presentation, Mr. Crum, and for being in my particular community and for the work you do statewide. I had the honor and privilege, and actually it was great fun to visit your facility and actually got to drive a semi. I had a lesson, so it was good work that NIT is doing for our state. And I appreciate the fact that one of the things you take very seriously is keeping your finger on the pulse of what the needs are, what the employment needs are, what the employers are looking for, and that you care that your graduates actually can find employment. That speaks a lot to the character of you as a business owner. I wanted to ask, because we heard earlier by Department of Labor that the Construction Academy was reaching out to youth, but isn't able to do that due to funding loss. Are you doing anything currently in regard to helping youth know about the opportunities, and have you done any work? It seems to me, I recall something with Matsu Career and Tech, perhaps, that you had some kind of relationship. Can you just talk about, because, you know, I asked the question earlier, would the private sector, you know, if there's a need, would they not step in? So I'm just wondering about this need with the youth.
Through the chair. We do have not only recruiting efforts where we travel statewide to educate anybody who wants to listen about the programs that we offer and our outlook on the industry, but we also have educational ones where we will host hands-on job fairs. For example, we've done this multiple occasions with the Office of Child Services, where for free we've donated the opportunity for the youth to come and not only visit the facilities, but to actually get their hands on some of the, you know, the cutting torch and the trucks and the heavy equipment. We do this with the local high schools. We're very, very supportive of Skills USA and offer scholarships to Skills USA, which is the high school basically trades competition. So yes, we do travel around and we do participate in specific events to reach out to Alaska's youth.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Crum. I really enjoyed your presentation and the work that you're doing. Certainly, you do have a really good sense of what's happening in the economy in Alaska. And again, thank you for coming before the committee. So we will take a brief at ease while we invite Amy Nybert and Amber Cartier with the Associated Builders and Contractors before us next. So with that, we'll take a brief at ease. Senate Labor and Commerce Committee is called back to order. Next, we have with us the President and Apprentice Director for the Associated Builders and Contractors, Amy Nybert and Amber Cartier. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Costello, for having Associated Builders and Contractors of Alaska present today. For the record, my name is Amy Nybert with ABC of Alaska. I'm the President and CEO, and with me today is our Director of Apprenticeship, Amber Cartier. Today we would like to present on our apprenticeship program. While still fairly new, the trust started, well, let me back up. The apprenticeship program started in 1999. Our trust was formed in 2011. And the history of ABC was started back in 1950 in Baltimore, Maryland. As of today, we've grown to 70 chapters nationwide, 21,000 members. And with 73% of the workforce in Alaska representing non-union, we represent 140 members here in Alaska. The Alaska chapter has been in operation since 1988. We currently of our 140 members, 70 of our members are utilizing the apprenticeship program.
Wow.
With, if you take out the suppliers and associate members, that's over 75% of our members utilizing our program. Additionally, I want to add that our apprenticeship program is member funded. So we do not take any state grants, although we have taken one, which I'll touch on here in a little bit. But we have not taken, our program is not is member funded, sorry, and continues to be. So the trades that we offer are carpentry, electrical, plumbing, HVAC. There's quite a list of them. The big ones are electrical and plumbing, which you need to be licensed by the state to work in the state of Alaska. So we register those apprentices with the Department of Labor. Our apprenticeship program is accredited through the Department of Labor. Sorry. The mission of our apprenticeship program is to provide an opportunity for interested and qualified applicants to receive craft and safety training while working for our participating member employers. This program offers individuals the opportunity to receive an academic and vocational education while working on the job for wages at our participating member companies. Investment of the training of new workers for the construction industry is a benefit to our participating members seeking long-term sustainable growth in the marketplace. So the benefits from being an apprentice is one-on-one training with your journeyman, and this qualifies you for a higher level of pay. You start out as an apprentice, you start out at a 50% of a journeyman's wage, and through a wage progression chart, you excel through the program with your hours and your online or your book work and your testing. And this exposes you to more of the latest technology and codes. We always say that construction is not about swinging a hammer anymore. And this also offers you a lifelong job mobility. Once you journey out, you can take your card and basically write your own ticket. So next you'll see our progression chart that we have through our office. So we have an application process. The apprentice comes in, or the applicant comes in, applies, goes through a process of the application, an interview, and a ranking. During this time, we tell the apprentice they can do their own job search, or when we have a member company wanting to hire an apprentice, they call us. So if I have an electrical company wanting to hire two apprentices, and this is one of the big things where we differ a little bit, is we send that company six resumes, and they do an interview process, and they hire the person. Whereas they just don't call out based on the number on the list. They can be as specific as how many hours or experience the apprentice has, any certifications the apprentice holds. So they do the interview. Let me back up. We do an interview at the office, and then the member company does an interview. They pick the candidate that's the best fit for their company. And then once they start with the company, we indenture them into the program. They then start their book work and their testing and start accruing their hours. And as I explained, some of the program details in the ranking of applicants is the basic minimum requirements from the Department of Labor, any education, trade education, general experience, certifications they might have. Then they go through their member company interviews for those that are looking for apprentices, indentured into the program, and then the program progression. So in 2014, we secured a state from the Alaska Workforce Investment Board focusing on oil and gas training and construction jobs related to oil and gas. We were challenged that year with having more apprentices in rural areas, wanting to train as an apprentice, but not having the opportunity to travel to Anchorage or Fairbanks for training. So we bought the training to them. With the grant, we bought tablets enabled with Wi-Fi, set up satellite offices at Samson Electric in Fairbanks and Udelhoven in Kenai, so that apprentices were able to have Wi-Fi-enabled services to do online training and testing and virtual training.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you. So that was just a one-year program with kind of some hardware invested. Mm-hmm. Was it a victim to state budget cuts, or did you find that it wasn't very as successful as you wanted, or what happened?
Well, at the time, there were only At the time, there were only two of us in the office, mm-hmm. And our number of apprentices grew to almost 385. At the time, so to implement a grant on top of keeping on top of all of our apprentices and members, it proved to be overwhelming. So we stepped back. I hired more staff. And this year, we've actually talked about doing another grant for continuing education.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. As you can see on the chart, our enrollment rates, or actually these are our enrollment numbers through 2013 through 2016. When I started 5 years ago, we were around 100 apprentices enrolled at the time working, and as of today, we are at 309 apprentices enrolled and working. This next slide, I'm going to defer to Amber. It's a little confusing, but we'll get it done.
Amber Cartier. For this slide, we just wanted to represent that we were growing in our completion rates. It doesn't take into account over the 4 year or 5 year education program, which is what ours runs generally. It's just taking the amount of completers at the end of 2013, 14, 15, and 16.
Amber, do you mind actually reading what those percentages are, because the blue is very similar?
In 2013, it's 20%. In 2014, it's 30%. 2015 is 32, and 2016 is 33.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you. So I'm not sure I understand what you mean about completion rates. What does this tell us about people who've stayed with the program and completed it versus gone on to other things?
That's where it gets a little bit convoluted. Our numbers, we switched over computer programs in 2014. So those numbers aren't necessarily available for the long term of if somebody were to have started 5 years ago and completed, you know, last year. The numbers are simply just representative of the say 309 apprentices we had on our books last year. Of those 309, 32 completed. Does that help?
It does help. I think perhaps this, it'll be a little while, I think a few years before we can actually get numbers that would be compared to other training programs. But I think you've explained it well.
Okay.
That of your total population, 32% of your population,
correct,
graduated out in that particular year. Because otherwise these numbers look low if you were to say, you know.
Yes.
That's what you're getting at, Senator Gardner?
Well, sort of, except you had 220 who started in 2013, and then this pie chart says 20% of those 220 graduated in 1 year?
No, I don't have that progression, that five-year retention rate part yet.
Okay, I'm just talking about 2013. 2013, 220 in the program. And what does the 20% in 2013 on the pie chart mean?
Just representative of the numbers that year that graduated. It's not of those 213 people that started.
But we don't.
So, Amber, I think, the information we're interested in is of the people who enter the program.
Right. That's what I need to get to.
And do you have a sense of that, or would you rather get back to us later?
I would prefer to get
back. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
So the biggest thing that we have been trying to work on is rural communities, reaching out to the rural communities. Some of our members, like Arctic Slope Regional Corp, CH2, Udelhoven, the North Slope Borough, and Watterson Construction, all utilize the apprenticeship program and have found ways to take these programs to the villages for Alaska Natives to become apprentices and eventually journeymen. I've listed a few of the work that they have done. CH2 is very broad in what they were doing, but most of it is North Slope work in Park.
Thank you.
As of 2017, 74% of our enrolled apprentices are electrical apprentices. 17% are plumbing, and these plumbing and electrical are the licensed trades here in the state of Alaska. And 9% are representative of the other trades of HVAC, sheet metal, carpentry. We did break down our apprentice rates by region. As you can see, the Arctic Slope region is around 62 apprentices. Southeast and Southwest is about, I think it was 9 or 10. Kenai, 40. Matsu, 60. Anchorage being the biggest at 80. And Fairbanks, 20. One of the interesting things that I don't have on here that I noticed was last year, or prior to 2014, the Arctic Slope region had the most with the oil. And now those rates have kind of evened out a little bit over the projects coming back to Matsu, Anchorage, and Fairbanks. This is our EEO by trade. You'll see that we combine women and minority together. 17% of our minority is Alaska Native. The women are the highest in the electrical. And our other trades, our women and minority are the highest there. Our veterans kind of average about 10% enrolled. We did have some apprentice statements for you, but the video won't play, so I just wanted to let you know I can send those on if needed.
I think that would be interesting, and we do have a copy of, or I guess we don't have a copy yet of the statements.
Yeah.
But okay, I think we would like to have that, and if you send that to me, we can share it with the committee.
Yeah, one of them I was really excited about. He came to us with no experience. And he got on with Megawatt Electric and is still there, and they have said he's one of the best apprentices that they've ever had. So it's a real success story for ABC. I just wanted to highlight a couple of things that stand us apart from the union. Our program is paid through participating members. There are no union dues for apprentices. Sometimes that monthly fee that we bill the employers does get passed on to the apprentice, but that's a case-by-case basis per employer. ABC, our direct study program, is flexible, comprehensive, and convenient, and they can do it at their own time and at their own pace. The apprentice is not required to take any time off work for any classroom study. It's once they begin their indentured into the program, they begin their book work and their testing and their on-the-job training. We have an open enrollment. It's all year round. We do interviews twice a month. There's no need to wait to apply to the ABC program. And we utilize standard curriculum that is recognized by NCCER, which is the National Center for Construction Education Research. So we do do a lot of work with AvTech. We see a lot of their apprentices, you know, go from AvTech to ABC. We maintain apprentice and applicant pools for employer use, and we provide employment opportunities throughout the industry. There are more employment opportunities when work is slow. If the apprentice gets laid off, we will try and put that apprentice back to work first so that they are able to complete their program. They can come back to us at any time, and we'll work with them to try and get them their hours to get their journeyman's card. There's greater promotion and pay increase opportunities based on performance. We are a merit shop free enterprise, so you work hard, you get paid better. And we have just started with our trust this past year, free certification classes in OSHA 10, OSHA 30, first aid CPR, journeyman prep tests, forklift training free for our apprentices. So it's a member benefit, but it's also a benefit for the workforce of Alaska.
Senator Gardner?
Thank you. I know that AvTech students pay tuition, and they have employers that often come out of industry. I have a friend who teaches there, and classroom programs and stuff. But the limitation is that, one, students pay tuition, and secondly, they can only come in when a class is started and go through the program, and they can't kind of come and go easily. But you have this open enrollment, and people can come in whenever they want. First of all, what is the cost to apprentices, if any, who pays it, and does the open enrollment, is that because they're doing kind of learning on computers, or do they have classrooms with other apprentices with them and dedicated instructors, or how does that work? With electricity especially, I want to know.
Through the chair. And when an applicant comes into our office, they fill out the application, there is a $50 application fee. Yeah. Once the application is processed, they go through the interview process, and then when an applicant is indentured with an employer, that employer starts to pay the $95 a month fee for the program. There is no cost to the apprentice unless that employer has an agreement with them when they're hired to pass that cost on to them. There are a few employers that do that. There are no classroom teachings right now. We would have to teach across the entire state. We would have to have classrooms across the entire state, or bring everybody here, and we just don't have that capability. So it's a correspondence courses. They are learning on their own through the book work. They test through their employer or a job center in their community. They are paired with a journeyman when they're indentured into with their employer. So that's their journeyman is their mentor. That's their teacher.
Thank you. And if I might, Madam Chair, do they graduate at some point? They just become a journeyman, or do they have some certification that they can take to other states or wherever, and it has a standard, it meets a standard?
Well, through the chair, they receive the licensed trades obviously receive their FITS card here if they decide to journey out through the electrical or plumbing program. For the non-licensed trades and licensed trades, they receive a certificate through the U.S. Department of Labor saying that they completed the ABC program.
Thank you. And just to be consistent, Madam Chair, as I asked of the other presenters, do you have any idea of what your completion rate is?
We were trying to represent that in the previous slide.
Right. That didn't kind of get there. Okay, thank you.
We won't unfairly judge you based on that slide. I think we understand that your programs are quite valuable, and that at some point you'll just get us those details. But
yes.
Senator Stevens?
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Just looking at how you stand apart from the union, you say you're not required to take time off from work. That seems a little hard to do. My real question is, what is the how much job on the job training versus how much theory? Half and half? Can you give me any idea of how that works?
Through the chair. I believe it's 160 hours of book work per level that they're required to have. That's what it's recorded. They're required, depending on the program that they're in, it's about 8,000 hours. Some are 6,000 hours that they're required to obtain over the 4 to 5 year term that they're in the program.
So 160 hours of book work and up to 8,000 hours.
For 8,000 hours is the total, 160 book hours per year or per level.
So I guess I was trying to get at the issue of the on-the-job experience. How important is that in all of
this? In all of this, it's required. They have to have the 6 to 8,000 hours, depending on the trade, in order to complete the program.
Yeah, it's 2 years
ago. On-the-job training.
6 to 8,000
hours
on the job training, 160 hours.
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
That's what I wrote down is 160 hours classroom, 6 to 8,000 on the job.
Yes.
Thank you.
Any further questions, Senator Stevens?
No, thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Just the future of our program, we would like to, a goal is of ours in the next 5 years is to open somewhat of a, you know, a small training center where we could hold classes like the ones that we're kind of doing through a third party now at the ABC office. And just keeping up with the times with more virtual tools and all the latest technology that they might need. We did have another short video for you that we will have to forward on. Every year we have a National Craft Championships for third and fourth year apprentices. They get to compete with all the other apprentices from all nationwide, all the other ABC chapters. ABC of Alaska is proud to have a national champion in our plumbing category. And in 2012 and in 2014, we had an apprentice finish second overall nationwide.
Very impressive. So with that, I want to thank you for coming before us. And are you finished with your presentation?
Yes.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much for coming before us. It's certainly been very interesting. And next, before the committee, we will have Mr. Doug Ward, the Director of the Shipyard Development for Vigor, and we'll take a brief at ease. Labor and Commerce is called back to order, and just to remind people listening in, we are looking at vocational education training. We have sort of a statewide look. We've also had the Department of Labor and Workforce Development come before us, but now we'd like to welcome Mr. Doug Ward and also Matt Auert, who are with Vigor. And if I'm, and please introduce yourself for the committee, too.
Yes, thank you very much, Chair Costello. My name is Doug Ward, and for the last 22 years, I've been Director of Shipyard Development for the ADA-owned Ketchikan Shipyard. And I have to tell you, it's been really a great project to be involved in, and the way things are turning out down there now, building two ferries for the state of Alaska with some awesome young Alaskan shipbuilders, it's really starting to get to be fun. So I guess what I'll talk about today is the lessons that we've learned over the 22 years of developing both shipyard infrastructure as well as figuring out how to develop the human infrastructure, the Alaskan shipbuilders that right today are busy at work turning out two Alaska-class ferries. What we've discovered when we started that project, Randy Johnson and I, we were new to the industry, but we saw the yard was closed, and we saw a tremendous opportunity for the state of Alaska to strengthen and diversify its economy in advanced manufacturing if that facility were to be open and become successful. So over the years, we figured out how to design a world-class shipyard, which we have now. We've learned how to design and build world-class ships. We're on our hulls fifth and sixth. And what we'll talk about today is how we've learned how to design and build Alaskan-class shipbuilders, and they are awesome. I brought with me today Matt Allward. We're going to talk about the Maritime Works, which is a Maritime Careers Partnership. We'll talk a little bit about that, but Matt is on our Leadership Council, and he's here today, so I invited him up here to provide moral support and maybe a comment on his side of the Alaska's maritime industries, which is fish harvesting. And he's also a manufacturer. He's got bulletproof nets in Homer, and he's building some really cool fishing nets that have the latest technology in there. So it's great to have Matt with me today. Thank you, Matt. So on Friday at the yard, this is kind of ironic that I had this invitation today, but we had had this plan for some time. We had a public rollout of a training initiative that we're calling Advancing Alaskan Workers. And Advancing Alaskan Workers is a demonstration project supported by Maritime Works, and it's the first demonstration project of an employer-led, jobs-driven training initiative that advances incumbent workers to middle skill and above in our organization in Ketchikan. I'm going to try and hurry through these first slides because the fun part is near the end, and I don't want to miss that. I think you're going to enjoy some of the methods and techniques that we're using to get young Alaskans to build great ships. A little bit about Vigor. Interestingly enough, Vigor started in Portland and bought the Cascade General shipyard business that operates the shipyard on Swan Island in Portland. And they did that in 1995. It was in 1994, and that, by the way, Cascade General was having some business problems, and they were likely to go under. Frank Foti, our CEO, went in and bought the company and saved the shipyard, and has got a very great going concern down there. In 1994, Randy Johnson and I entered into an agreement with the Department of Transportation to reactivate the Ketchikan shipyard, which had been closed, had failed, and was closed and abandoned, and had been so for 3 years. In 1994, about the same time as Vigor started, we started in Ketchikan. I think one of the interesting and really valuable qualities that Vigor brings to the Ketchikan shipyard and to Alaska is a really strong commitment to its frontline workers and the people it works in its organizations, and how they develop not just the production skills, but how to become good citizens, good family members, and strong members of their community. So the commitment is there to not only to the industry, but to the communities that we live and work in. And ADA noted that when they evaluated Vigor's proposal to buy Alaska Ship and Dry Dock in March 2012, they were impressed with Vigor's commitment to both the people that work for the, with them and the communities they live and work in. And it's because of Vigor's increased emphasis on skill building that I'm here today to tell you what our experiences have been in Ketchikan. One of the real assets that Vigor brings is a diverse set of business lines. They're in shipbuilding, ship repair, which those are two rather uncommon. They're two totally different activities. Shipbuilding, I don't want to say it's simple, but compared to ship repair, you have lots of time to plan and plan the work, stage the work, and make sure everything is there. Where ship repair, you've got to be like an emergency medical technician and respond immediately and be very competent and very knowledgeable. Specialty boats, about a year and a half or 2 years ago, we purchased a Quijac Marine in Ballard. You may be familiar with Quijac and their Bristol Bay fishing boats. Since then, they've been into foreign military sales. And even more recently, we purchased the Oregon Iron Works in Clackamas, Oregon, which brings significant manufacturing sophistication to our company. They're into nuclear, both reactors and nuclear waste storage modules. They're manufacturing hydroelectric dam steel structures, as well as the missile tubes up at Fort Greeley. So they bring some real advanced manufacturing to the table, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. At the Ketchikan Shipyard, just talk a little bit about the employment we have there. Currently, we've got 180 direct jobs, with creating 90 indirect jobs for a total of 270 jobs in Ketchikan, paying over $14 million in wages, both direct and indirect. We also operate the Seward Shipyard, which has another 30 to 50 employees up there, bringing a grand total of 320 shipbuilders and repairers that we employ in Alaska. Our wages are 35% higher in Ketchikan than the average private sector wages. We're just a little over $60,000 annual wage, annual average wages, and the private sector average, the rest of the private sector average is around $41,000. We've got a young workforce, and I think that reflects in our training practices that we'll describe in a little bit. But our average age is 38 years old, which is about 17 years younger than the average manufacturing workforce. And as soon as a few of us old dogs retire, that's going to drop a lot. So we're looking forward to the younger generations to step in and take over not only the production jobs, but the supervisory management and corporate leadership positions that we need to build ships in Alaska. Maritime works. So over the years, and as we started off on our journey trying to figure out how to design a shipyard, how to become competitive in that, we got involved with the National Shipbuilding Research Program, which is funded by the U.S. Navy to reduce the cost of building and repairing ships, warships. The Navy recognizes that without a strong commercial industrial base, the ability to ramp up in times of warfare is extremely difficult. So they're very interested in maintaining a healthy private sector commercial shipbuilding industrial base, and we found that a totally invaluable tool to understand the industry and to get some really cutting edge information on how the U.S. industry is responding to the competitive position we find ourselves in now, when foreign nation states are providing significant operating subsidies to foreign shipyards. Now, in today's global economy, and there seems to be like an 8-year cycle in shipbuilding, right now shipyards are closing all around the world. Tankers are being used to store oil. It's quite a remarkable set of events that have occurred in the last 3 years. But we are optimistic that with some of the practices that we've developed and learned about through NSRP, that we'll be able to iron out or level out those cyclical changes, at least in shipbuilding. Repair is seasonally cyclical, and that we can't change. But by having a strong shipbuilding workforce, that levels out the peaks and valleys of seasonal repair demand. Maritime works. So as we were beginning to look at how to develop a workforce, I got involved in the National Shipbuilding Research Program's Crosscut Panel, which was focused on skill development at the time. And as in about 1998, when I started with them, we were beginning to look at workforces across a lot of U.S. shipyards, and what we found was that there was no common definition of a ship fitter from one yard to the next. So the occupational titles that existed in shipyards was not a lot of help in trying to figure out what knowledge, skills, and abilities were required in order to actually build ships. So we stepped back and we went at it a different way, and we looked at the functional processes that go on, the functional industrial processes that are required to build ships, and then we looked at the key tasks within each one of those processes. We're not using occupational titles, we're using terms like fabrication, assembly, testing, quality control, administration as a function, and we place those all in a cube. And at the intersection of those various titles is what we call the skill standard, which described what the work was. I'll give you an example. At the intersection of installation and corrosion control would be the installation of zincs on the hull of the ship. So what we did was do a narrative of the work that how that work would proceed, any industry standards that required, regulatory standards that required, and then this was the important part. We listed the key tasks that were required to be performed successfully in order to complete that installation of Zinks on a Hall. And those key tasks become the essence of what's required in terms of knowledge and skills to do that work. So once we had that catalog of skill standards, we now had a functional basis of the actual knowledge, skills, and abilities that were required to build ships. And that is where we started from back in about 2001, is looking at shipbuilding in more of a global term, less concerned with occupations and more concerned about what the actual work required of the individuals to perform. So maritime works was one of the, in order to sustain this, it was a lot of different yards are trying different training techniques, and with standard or traditional public-funded training programs, there were some difficulties with that, and usually they last a year, sometimes 2 years. There's lots of reporting requirements, which shouldn't be as big of a challenge as it is. And probably more importantly is the ability to change course and change direction as technology and competition changes the environment in which we have to work. So we began learning about a framework for developing a mutual fund for workforce investments that recognizes the private sector investment in training and then leverages other public and philanthropic sources of funds to provide a stable, flexible, multi-year funding resource in order to create continuous improvement in the workforce. It's, at least in shipbuilding, it's something that requires continuous education. The rate of change in technology is fantastic. We're really picking up with the rest of the world, and we can't be stagnant. Plus, we have attrition, and we want to keep up with that. So,
Mr. Ward, I'm going to just interrupt you to tell you that it's not lost on me the comprehensive and process and the significance of you drilling down into the actual measurable skill that is required to perform a given task. This is actually something that I've seen in education, and if we can replicate that in our schools, we know that you can ask the question, what does excellence look like, and you know, because you have it measurable, and you say this is what you know what our students or what an employee needs to do. So I wanted to highlight that for the committee members, because that's a pretty significant undertaking.
Yes, thank you, Chair Costello. And that was not without significant debate as we undertook that effort. But what we learned there, that by having actual ship production managers, people that actually did the work on the workforce panel, put a whole different flavor on the discussions that we were having. And it was the production people that were saying, you know, we don't really, and I don't want to say that we don't care about certifications, but for them, and these are people from Newport News Shipyard and Groton, Massachusetts, where they're building nuclear submarines. These are some fairly high-powered shipbuilders. They were saying that we care about the ability to reduce rework, avoid accidents, and increase profitability. Those types of business measures are what they were concerned with. And we'll talk more on how we're going to apply that in this demonstration project. So anyway,
we have about 10 minutes left in the committee, so I don't want to rush you, but I just wanted to let you have the opportunity to prioritize your comments.
I will do that very much. So thank you. So Maritime Works is a fairly new organization. Matt is on our leadership council, and our job was to implement the 2014 Alaska Maritime Workforce Development Plan. We have six of us individuals spent about 3 years working on that plan. We did not want to see the thing end up with as so many plans do. So we vowed to actually implement the plan, and that's what we're doing. Matt Alward's on our leadership committee. Julie Decker down in Rango with the Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation is our chair. And we put the Maritime Works into the Alaska Process Industry Career Consortium in Anchorage. Some of you may be familiar with them. They've been providing process technicians to the oil and gas industry for 17 years. It was a natural fit for Maritime Works. The values that that APIC has, partnership, leadership, awareness, advocacy, and alignment, are exactly what we built Maritime Works on, which is learning, sharing, partnering. So Carrie Ann Carty, the new executive director, is a driven woman. She's a great executive director of both APIC and Maritime Works. And most of the leadership council was down Friday for this rollout. So let's talk a little bit about the project itself, the demonstration project called Advance Alaska Workers. Pictured there is Marcia Togiak. She came down last year, a year ago, December. She was an intern from the Togiak region. Crystal Bay Economic Development Corporation sent her down, and that began our experiences with internships. She spent 6 months with us, learned a lot. We learned from her as well, how to coach and mentor younger people in our workforce. She's gone back up to the NACNAC region and is employed with one of our competitors, and they're making inroads on our businesses, so we know she's doing pretty good. I think the ability to absorb interns and not only teach them, but learn from them is a fairly important aspect of our program. And we do have two interns from the Webb Institute, which is the leading naval architecture school in the U.S. We have a long tradition with Webb. Rick Thorpe, who was a Webb graduate, helped design the 1999 shipyard development plan. Now we have two Webb students in the workshop, and there's a young man from Eric Ulrey from Thorn Bay who is back there now.
Mr. Ward, I'm going to interrupt you just to say that we've been joined by Senator Stedman in the back of the room, and also Senator Bishop. I guess this is quite interesting, or there's another committee coming into the room.
Yes. Okay, or both. All right.
And I've been told that there's another committee coming into the room. So even though your presentation is very interesting, I think.
And I'll get right to the to the point. So we're going to use the principles that we built Maritime Works on and that we've learned through the National Shipbuilding Research Program to take business metrics for things like the frontline production crew. Well, I'm sorry, let's go on to the next. Let's go right past that. I think we'll come back to our partners. So the business metrics, we're now on page 10 of the presentation, and this is how our Advancing Alaska Workers is going to work. We're looking at things like reportable accident rates, near-miss reports, rework, workforce retention, and cost and schedule performance indexes as the business measures that we value and that determine whether or not we're competitive. So we're going to try and apply those business measures to a structured on-the-job training that you heard about. But we're going to put structure into that where we're actually gathering information from the frontline worker with mobile applications. An example of one that's actually producing results is our Vigor Safety app. And what we were finding back in 2013, we had an annual reportable incident rate of 15. just yesterday we got our 2016 report of emergency rate. It's 1.82. And we did that by having a young naval architect develop our Vigor safety app for generating near-miss reports. So before, you'd have to go find a paper copy of a near-miss report, fill it out by hand, maybe take a picture and attach that, go somewhere and scan it and send off an email, and that email would probably only go to one person. With the safety app now, you can, on your mobile app, you can take a picture or a video of the situation that was causing a potential threat. And then put a little narrative in with voice if you want, hit send, and that goes out to the entire production team and informs everybody of what the incident was and what the fix was. And in less than a year, in less than 2 years, we've seen that incredible improvement on the incident rate.
So, Mr. Ward, I do want to give time for the next committee to come in, and I know that there's just, it's just a cascade of success, the story that you have to tell. So I do want to offer you an opportunity to provide in writing or video or anything, any information that I would be more than happy to send around to the committee members. And I'm sure you'll be available outside the room, too, afterwards. Yes, Senator Gardner.
Madam Chair, before we close, I'd like to thank you, Mr. Ward, for your testimony and tell you I sort of collect phrases that I hear people say, and you said something that I just love. You said you're learning how to design and build Alaska-class shipbuilders.
Yes, thank you. Well, that is our most important job, and that's really the most fun. And with the workforce that we see emerging down there now, they are literally, we can't give them enough training. And Frank Foti was up for our rollout in our Chamber of Wards banquet, and he's the CEO of Vigor. And he said on Friday that our shipyard, in the 4 years they've owned it, that we have become, the Ketchikan shipyard has become the heart and soul of Vigor. Now that's a huge turnaround from 4 years ago when we were purchased and they were wondering if we know how to wear shoes and pants. So it speaks to the work ethic, the integrity, the innovation that an Alaskan worker brings to a very complex and challenging project who's building the ships that are going to take us into the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And with that, I think I will let those be the closing comments for the committee. I want to thank the committee members for being here and thank all of our presenters today. And we're adjourned.